Thanks for listening to the Best of Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for the Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
This is the Best of the Herd with Colin Cowherd on Fox Sports Radio.
Oh, it is a Thursday, and we are jammed. All sorts of great news out there live in Los Angeles. It's the Herd, wherever you may be and however you may be listening. iHeartRadio, Fox Sports Radio, FS1, Greg Cosell in 2 hours today. We are jammed. Lots of stuff happening. Coaching interviews. Can anybody fix the Bears and the New York Giants? Joy Taylor, in a beautiful dress this morning, is joining me. Joy, how are you?
Thank you. I'm good. I'm looking forward to seeing which direction all of these teams go with their coaching hires.
So am I.
It's getting interesting.
It really is getting interesting. I want to start with something I hear all the time. So I hear a lot from you, the consumer, and I've said for years, Joy is my witness. You drive this show. That's why I talk 70% NFL. Because of the last 100 TV shows last year, the highest rated, 91 were NFL. Let the other shows talk NBA and baseball. I talk NFL. This is what you like. I'm a grocery store. Every time you go, you get bananas, peanut butter, milk, eggs, bread, and that's what I give you. Because that's what you show me you like. You drive the show. And I hear you saying a lot, I do not trust the media. I hear that a lot. I do not trust the media. I hear you. But can I one time, just one time, be critical of the fans? Just once. This will be it. You lack self-awareness. You say you don't trust the media, but if you're a conservative, you watch Fox News every night and you don't trust MSNBC, and liberals watch MSNBC and don't trust Fox. Have more self-awareness. You trust the media that you agree with. And I'll start my rant there, and I'll come back to that. So the MVP race, like everything in America, weather becomes political. Colin, why do you talk politics? Because it's everywhere. You can't have a conversation everywhere. Vaccines become political. Everything's political. So the MVP race, Aaron Rodgers is going to run away with it. And if not, oh boy, the media you trust is going to frame it a certain way. So it's interesting. I was thinking about this morning. There's an old NFL belief. This is a long-held saying. Wins are not a quarterback stat. I mean, Justin Herbert, he's great. He didn't win enough. They always say wins are not a quarterback stat. You can't count wins just as a quarterback stat. Now, I think quarterbacks and wins go hand in hand a lot, but let's start with that because that's a long-held belief. So for the MVP race, this morning I compiled 7 to 8 categories that I think are the most important stats for a quarterback. Passing yards. You know, they throw the ball. What are your total passing yards? Passing touchdowns. It's all about scoring the most points. Completions. You got to be accurate here. I want your total completions. Your completion percentage. I'm not saying you have to throw the most. It does matter that you're accurate. So I'm not going to reward somebody who throws a zillion times and punish somebody who's got a more balanced offense. So completion percentage matters. Yards per attempt. I'm not giving the MVP to a dink-dunk guy. Big pass plays. That's a big one to me. That's passes over 20 yards. That's a home run hitter. Can you hit for power in baseball? Kind of matters to me. Can you throw for power in football? Tua doesn't have a lot of big pass plays. Either's Mac Jones. And then passer rating. Kind of, you put all these things together. So the MVP race, it can't just start with wins. I mean, Brady's got 13. Aaron's got 13. But they play in kind of lousy divisions. Joe Burrow has 10, but plays in a way better division. So to me, 10 wins in Joe Burrow's division is more impressive than Aaron or Tom winning 13 in their crappy division. So take the wins thing out of it. All those guys, Burrow, Brady, and Aaron, all won their division. Burrow won a much tougher division with a lousier roster. To me, that's as impressive as winning two or three more games. So who had all these stats? So passing yards total. Who had that one? Well, that was Brady. All right. Total passing yards. Hey, who got the ball in the end zone most? Oh, that was Brady, too. Okay, total completions. Let's go total completion. That was Brady, too. All right. What if a quarterback threw less? Completion percentage. Burrow? Playing the Steelers defense twice? And the Ravens defense twice? And the Browns defense twice? With his crappy offensive line? All right, yards per attempt. That's Burrow, too. All right. Anybody can... I want to know total big plays. I know Burrow was going to win this next one. That's Brady, too. All right, did Aaron win passer rating? Aaron won passer rating. Congratulations, he won passer rating. Well, he threw fewer picks. Oh, good hell, folks. We don't give the NBA MVP to the fewest turnovers. Steph Curry was a unanimous MVP. He turned the ball over a lot. Why? Because when you have the ball in your hands, you turn it over. You gave Westbrook one. He's like a turnover machine. We don't take away or give MVPs because the fewest picks or fewest turnovers. You're going to throw picks if you throw the damn ball down the field. And I don't get me wrong, Aaron doesn't throw a lot of picks. But when I hear Aaron has to win MVP or it was about, you know what, shot in the arm, it's a bunch of nonsense. You could certainly give it to Aaron. I think I would give it to Burrow. Brady has an absolute argument. I would give it to Burrow because I think he's done more with less. He has the worst offensive line in the playoffs. He's got the worst roster in the playoffs. Arians won a Super Bowl. Matt LaFleur, we know, is great. We think Zach Taylor's good, but he was lousy before Burrow. I would give it to Burrow by an inch over Aaron or Tom. But just be careful. The media you trust. Oh, I always hear about that. We don't trust the media. No, you do. You just trust the ones you agree with. So if Aaron doesn't win, I'll just be checking back on how that's handled by the media you trust or don't. Okay, Russell Westbrook last night couldn't shoot. Lakers lost. And I suppose I could spend the next, 5 minutes ripping Westbrook. I will not. I have strangely become the Westbrook defender. Russell Westbrook has never been a great shooter. He's had a really, really bad January. So he's a bad shooter in a slump, which is really bad. But I'm not going to spend time ripping Westbrook. As I said before, when you brought him here, hustle, passion, minutes, production. He's given you every bit of that. He can't shoot, nor does he make everybody better. But he gives you production. He's exactly what I said he would be. You're the ones that voted him MVP. I didn't. I said it was ridiculous. You thought he was an MVP. But it's interesting. I'm thinking about this morning about one of the reasons that Tom Brady is the GOAT is that we argued about it 4 and 5 years ago. But there's no question that Brady's greatness in the last 4 years in the 40s has made us go, bruh, he's the guy. Like, you can't bring anybody else up. You can't bring Favre, Manning. The fact that Brady is this good at the end of his career is without question a huge bonus for Tom. Yeah, the Super Bowls matter too. But we got to be honest. He's arguably the MVP at 44. Big Ben's 38, 39. He was shot 2 years ago. Favre was shot at like 38. Tom's MVP level at 44. So you think about the LA experience and this Michael Jordan LeBron thing. So the LA experience, LeBron's career has been very similar. Everywhere he goes, Miami, Cleveland, Lakers. He wins a title in year two, and then the team kind of gets weird, falls apart, and old. So his first year in LA, he inherits a bunch of crud, young players that can't play. They get rid of almost all of them. They're bad. Year two, pandemic hits. He wins a title with AD. Year three, AD comes in post-championship out of shape. Lakers finish seventh. And this year, in year four, the team's older, AD's hurt again, Westbrook's a weird fit, and they're eighth. And you think to yourself, well, this LA thing is not going well for LeBron. Loves LA, has movies, production business is amazing, his real estate business is great, he's got a title, and his family loves it. Does everybody realize that if we're going to give Brady the credit for being the GOAT, and a chunk of that is, wow, he's better in his 40s than he was at 38. LeBron James right now is number two in the NBA in scoring, among the NBA leaders in minutes, and is a top three, four MVP candidate. Michael Jordan at the end couldn't jump. Go back to D.C. He limped around in D.C. Kobe's last 3 years, he had 60 his final night, but the teams were lousy. Shaq was broken down. So was Larry Bird. Magic retired early. Akeem ended up a Raptor. Patrick Ewing ended up near Disney World. Every, no exception, all the NBA greats limp, fall apart, irrelevant, bad teams, look silly in a new jersey. Here's LeBron. So if you're going to give Tom Brady the, okay, it matters, right? Like a life well spent. It does matter if you've fallen apart at 58 because you smoked cigarettes, drank too much, and never worked out. And if your neighbor is 68 and looks fantastic, he's got the silver hair, he's in shape, he doesn't smoke and casually drinks and looks better, it counts on the life. The final chapter, slam dunk. You look at NBA stars, final chapter, it's awful. Jordan couldn't make the playoffs in the awful Eastern Conference. LeBron second in scoring, top five in MVP. The rest of its team is a tire fire. And last night, he's going out again. What is it, year 18? So I look at this LA experiment, and a lot of people are like, woo, this isn't working. Loves LA, got a title, still fantastic, business is amazing, family loves it. This separates him. For those who are LeBron over MJ people, you got to count the final chapters. Have to. And his crushes MJ.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
Fans always say stuff like, you sports guys never admit when you're wrong. Yeah, except for I actually have a segment every Monday for 10 minutes. It's the highest rated segment in sports talk radio in America, meaning it's my highest rated sports talk segment. And it's called Colin Right, Colin Wrong. So I admit it every week. I'd like to see fans line up occasionally and admit they're wrong. So I'm going to admit another wrong right here because I don't care. If I can hit like 75 out of 100, I'm good. So when Joe Judge was hired by the New York Giants, he was great at the press conference. He was strong and focused and there was no stuttering. And he was unbelievable at the press conference. And I said, he's saying the right stuff. I never heard of him. I mean, I'd seen his name before, but didn't know anything about him. But I'm like, boy, he was great at the press conference. And I've said before, Mike Tomlin, no losing seasons. Great at the podium. Sean McVay, as good as anybody ever at the podium. Kyle Shanahan, almost all the good coaches. Are, you know, Arians, no BS. Andy Reid's funny at the podium. Sean Payton's great at the podium. But I ripped Nick Sirianni because he was a goofball at his opening press conference. And I ripped Dan Campbell at his opening press conference. He was talking about eating kneecaps. And they got worse, by the way. Sirianni stopped holding them. Campbell kept talking, and they get worse every week. But in the end, I've never seen a team with less talent play as hard as the Lion players did for Dan Campbell. And Nick Sirianni would at least get an honorable mention vote for Coach of the Year. Philadelphia plays their arse off, and they're in a rebuild. Sirianni's been great. And he was terrible at the podium. Joe Judge was fantastic, and he was a disaster. So what does it mean? It means whatever you are, just be authentic. And whereas Joe Judge sold himself well, I talked to somebody on the Giants staff in the last week. That wasn't how he coached. He sold himself at the podium well. That wasn't how he coached. And Sirianni and Dan Campbell are bad at the podium a lot. But that's who they are, and the players are okay with it. Because the players think they're authentic, they believe in them, and the players think that Sirianni and Dan Campbell care about them. And that's what players want. Do you care about me? It matters. Does our boss care about us? Are they rooting for us? Do they have something beyond their own self-interest in mind? And Giant players probably didn't feel that. And Philadelphia players do. I think Miami players do. That's why I didn't like the firing of Brian Flores. But I said, and I've said this multiple times, all of us have a bias. I do. My bias is, of many biases I probably have, we all have a bias. We want our thoughts to be right, right? We all have confirmation bias. We all want to be right and smart. And most of us can pivot off when we're not. Some people can't. But I tend to be verbally biased, that if you're not good verbally, I kind of write you off. If you can't figure out a six-minute press conference and you're babbling and saying dumb crap, I think you're kind of an idiot. But the truth is, if you're not great speaking, you can still be a great coach. Not everybody can be Mike Tomlin. Hey, Gruden was great at the podium. Tomlin's great at the podium. McVay's great at the podium. Joe Judge was too. Belichick's awful. But that's kind of who he is. It's authentic to who Bill is. He's probably pretty short and impatient and snarky a lot of the times with people he'd like to dismiss, mostly us.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific.
Hey, this is Jason McIntyre. Join me every weekday morning on my podcast, Straight Fire with Jason McIntyre. This isn't your typical sports pod pushing the same tired narratives down your throat every day. Straight Fire gives you honest opinions on all the biggest sports headlines, accurate stats to help you win big at the sportsbook, and all the best guests. Do yourself a favor and listen to Straight Fire with Jason McIntyre on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What I'm about to tell you is not an opinion. It is fact. The best quarterback won every single division. Every single division. Josh Allen's the best quarterback. So is Joe Burrow. And I know I didn't think it before the season, but Tannehill was the best quarterback in that division. Wentz has more talent, but he makes too many mistakes. He's got a Sam Darnold reckless quality, and he crushed them down the end. And then Patrick Mahomes. In the NFC, the best quarterback won every single division. And you know who they are. Aaron Rodgers, Dak Prescott, Tom Brady, and yes, Matt Stafford was the best quarterback. Highest rated fourth quarter passer rating, highest rated second halves. Kyler got hurt for multiple games and regressed at the end. And Russell Wilson missed a month, and when he came back, he was bad for 3 weeks. The best quarterback won every single division. But perhaps the most jarring and most glaring example of the value of quarterback in this league is Derek Carr. The owner is the poorest. Lost their coach, Henry Ruggs tragedy. The GM appears to be at best marginally competent. They have multiple first and second round total whiffs. The roster on the second back end is bad. Tough division, total chaos, injuries after Thanksgiving, and he's in the playoffs. So my question to you is, what is a quarterback worth if he's Russell Wilson, Aaron Rodgers, and Deshaun Watson? What are they worth? Ask Denver right now or the Giants. It's like I say about transportation. You don't know how badly you miss it until you have a bad car that breaks down regularly. And then you realize, hell, that's why I pay $800 for a car lease. You never miss transportation more than when it's bad. And then you know it's priceless. It is priceless. So I'm going to throw a thought balloon at you. And many times in this country, we're very polarized. And it's very easy to say that's stupid to people. Most billionaires had an idea that they pitched dozens of times and people said no. American Idol was pitched to every network and everybody said no. It ran Fox for over a decade. It has now been copied by every other network. It was told no for years by every network executive, not by mouth breathers, by like network execs who are in the TV business. Won't work. Literally, highest ad rate in the history of television when it was on. What would you give up if you're the New York Giants to get Russell Wilson? Because if I'm John Snyder, here's what I would say. I want every first-round pick until he's no longer a Giant. If he stays 10 years, I get every first-round pick. Well, you think it's ridiculous. If I would have told you that a six-round pick who was not a star in college would not only be a star in the NFL, he would easily be the greatest player of all time. That's ridiculous, isn't it? If I told you there's going to be a business 15 years ago where you would put your kids in a stranger's car and he would drive them to birthday parties, it's called Uber. It has changed American transportation. Uber. All the smart guys said that was a dumb idea. It has ruined parking garages. It has lowered DUIs. It has changed our employment structure in America. People have given up jobs. Uber. Stupid idea. Six-round guy out of Michigan. Coach didn't even start him. He's going to be the best player by a mile in league history. You're the New York Giants today. You have no solution at quarterback, and it's not Daniel Jones. You don't have a GM, you don't have a coach, and you don't have a quarterback, and you have the worst offensive line in the league. So the quarterback better be an athlete, and he also better be a leader. And I'm John Snyder, and I say, I want every first-round pick until he's no longer a New York Giant. Would you do it? Damn right you would. You wouldn't do it. All right, good luck getting the GM, coach, and quarterback right. Forget the O-line, because you have one legitimate NFL starter on the O-line. Andrew Thomas. That is it. That is it. Somebody in the Giants building told me, we got one offensive line who starts. One legitimate starter. So that sounds crazy. But look at the number of picks. Think about this. Think about the number of first-round picks we have given up for college quarterbacks. People aren't even in the league, and teams will give up four firsts to draft the right to draft a college quarterback. You wouldn't give up 9-10 for Russell Wilson? Just a thought balloon. It sounds crazy. So did Uber. Hey, we're going to create this website. People put pictures of their cats on it. It's going to run the world, huh? It's called Facebook. It's going to just put pictures of cats and animals on it and talk to loony cousins. It'll be the biggest company in the world. Reality television star, 400 lawsuits, highly polarizing. He's going to be president. That happened. He's probably going to run again here in about 2-3 years. I'm just saying, if you're the Giants, what would you give up for Russell Wilson? I, as a general manager, would give you every first-round pick until he's not a Giant. Because, by the way, if I'm keeping him for 9 years, he's winning a lot of games. He's filling my stadium. He's selling my merchandise. He puts me on television. Because right now the Giants are so bad everywhere. Except left tackle, one defensive tackle, a decent corner, a solid rookie wide receiver. They're so bad everywhere. I would do it.
Want more Herd? The Herd streams 24 hours a day, 7 days a week within the iHeartRadio app. Search Herd to listen live or on demand whenever you'd like.
I've always said if I wasn't a sportscaster, I'd want to be an NFL GM. So I did create a business called Cowherd Consulting. And today I'm going to give you my advice for all the job openings in the NFL. If I was the general manager, my consulting firm, it's always available. The phone number, look it up. Cowherd Consulting. I am consulting with teams on how to fix their lousy club.
Howard Cowherd Consulting fixed the Las Vegas Raiders.
They need a cultural change. So I would bring in a guy who's got four experiences rebuilding cultures. Jim Harbaugh, bring him in, rebuild the culture. I would fix the defense on the back end. Outside of pass rush, only the Jets and the Jags had fewer takeaways. Back seven, I would draft linebackers, corners, and safeties, and I would give Derek Carr a statue for what he's put up with and give him a contract extension.
How would you fix the Denver Broncos?
I would hire an offensive coach. You are ready to win now. You keep hiring defensive coaches. Vance Joseph, Vic Fangio, John Fox. It's not working, and your division's got star quarterbacks. Better figure out how to score points. You can't defend your way to a title in that division. Step two, veteran quarterback. Aaron Rodgers, Russell Wilson, Kirk Cousins. Go big. You're ready to win now. Then I get an edge rusher. When Von Miller left, they have like 25th in sacks. They got to go get – they had good ones – but Von Miller's now a Ram. Go get an edge rusher, and your roster will be complete.
How to fix the New York Giants.
Hire a GM and then a coach. I'll let you figure that out. Number two, strip down the entire offense. I don't care about the defense. You got some players there. Strip down the entire offense outside of Andrew Thomas and Ladarius Toney. Excellent left tackle. Very clever number two wide receiving talent. Three, I would decline Daniel Jones' fifth-year option. And consider in that rebuild for the offense going big and getting a Russell Wilson. But the key is really rebuild the offense outside of left tackle and Toney. It's a bunch of overpaid nonsense.
The Bears.
I would hire Doug Peterson. Specifically hire Doug Peterson first because I trust Doug Peterson. Then I would go get a general manager. People often do the opposite. This is an organization that's living in the past. They're the only franchise in league history without a 4,000-yard passer. And then I would completely rebuild the offense, whatever it takes for Justin Fields. Their leading touchdown person this year, 5 touchdowns, David Montgomery. Their defense needs to be rebuilt. I do not care. Receivers, O-line, backs, you've got to build Justin Fields' confidence and resume up. You got Aaron Rodgers in that division. Defense has limit. You've had good defenses for the last 7 years. You got to score points in this division with Cousins and Jefferson and Thielen and Aaron Rodgers and Devontae Adams. Go heavy offense.
How would you fix the Minnesota Vikings?
I would hire Kellen Moore. I would hire an offensive young guy, not an old defensive guy you replace. I would draft a quarterback early to eventually in 1 year replace Kirk Cousins. And then I would pray Aaron Rodgers leaves the division.
How would you fix the Miami Dolphins?
One, you should have never fired Brian Flores. So stop firing coaches. Juan Stat's the last guy that's completed 4 years. Number two, stop lying to yourself about Tua. Step three, repeat steps 1 and 2.
I'm also willing to consult for a big check. How would you fix the Jacksonville Jaguars?
At this moment, Coward Consulting is busy, and we're going to pass on any infrastructure realignments with the Jack. Coward Consulting does have the right to say no.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
Greg Cosell, 42 years NFL Films. Nobody is better. We got playoff games to discuss, whether you like fantasy football, betting football, or getting smarter at football. This is what Greg does. So let's go Bengals and Raiders. Joe Burrow's had a fantastic year. He throws it down the field. It's not a great O-line. What would worry you, because the Raiders have a pass rush, what would worry you about Burrow this weekend?
Just what you said. You know, these teams played week 11, and that was just before the Bengals offense really started to hit on all cylinders, and they won the game, but it was a very close game. Burrow was under duress in that game quite a bit, Colin.
Yep.
He had 20 completions for less than 150 yards. He started to anticipate and perceive pressure because he was getting quite a bit of it. And I'm very anxious to see how they go about playing this week because they do not like to protect with more than 5. And I'm very curious how they go about it. That would be my main concern on that side of the ball. Now, in that game, Joe Mixon had, I think, close to 30 carries and about 130 yards. But they've really moved away. I don't want to say moved away totally from Mixon, but they've become a passing team. They take the one-on-ones on the perimeter. They'll get one-on-ones on the perimeter, and they're going to have to hit those.
All right, Derek Carr has been so good in overtime, so good down the stretch in regulation this year. I think it's like 6-0. What does the tape say on Derek?
Yeah, you know, I struggle with Derek Carr. And when I say that, I don't mean I don't like him. But I think there are times he looks so good. I mean, he throws a beautiful ball. He's got that compact delivery. There are times it comes out, it looks like Aaron Rodgers. And then there's other times I feel like he doesn't set his feet, that he's a little antsy in the pocket, a little uncertain. So I go back and forth watching his tape. But he's certainly capable of big throws. I just want to mention one matchup that I think you will see, and it's kind of an off-the-cuff matchup here, but about midseason, the Bengals signed Trey Flowers. Remember, he was a corner for the Seahawks?
Yeah.
He doesn't start for them, but they play him a lot at times when they play good tight ends because he's a big corner, and it would not surprise me in this game to see Trey Flowers matched against Darren Waller because Trey Flowers matched up against Mark Andrews this year, did a nice job. So look for that matchup on that side of the ball. I would expect to see it.
All right, Eagles-Buccaneers. Bucs beat them earlier this year. What can the Eagles do offensively to change the previous game on Thursday Night Football?
Well, at that time, the Eagles were not running the ball at all. I think they had three runs by running backs. So they changed their entire offense sort of midway through the season. And that gun run game, the run game out of the shotgun, is really difficult to defend because you've got the zone read element, you've got the inside zone, they've got big, big bodies up front that are mobile. And that Bucs defense, run defense, Colin, is not quite as good this year as it was a year ago.
Yeah, I've heard that, yeah.
I'm very anxious to see how that plays out because the Eagles are about being physical, controlling the pace and tempo. The question is the other side of the ball. The Eagles defense does play fast. They're very scheme dependent. They don't have great players. You know, they have a few good players, but no real great players. The question is, how will they choose to play? They like to rush five at times. I'd be careful about in this game. I know people say you got to speed up Brady, but when they rush five, they either play man or they play three under three deep, meaning three underneath zone defenders. Too many voids for Brady. I think he would eat that up. So I'm very anxious to see how they play them. And the other area is the red zone. The Bucs are phenomenal in the red zone.
Brady's been great this year. Yeah.
And the Eagles are not good stopping touchdowns in the red zone.
Brady's red zone efficiency, I don't know where he ranks, but you get a lot of touchdowns. You don't see their field goal kicker a lot in the red zone.
No. Well, just so you know, he's got 30 touchdown passes and no picks in the red zone this year.
Okay, there you go. That's what my eyes tell me. Mm-hmm. All right, let's go Niners-Cowboys. So let's talk about the Cowboys do a lot of man-to-man stuff. I got Deebo Samuel, George Kittle. These are hard guys to defend with one. So what are the Niners going to do offensively? What does the film say?
Well, we know the Niners will run the ball. But what the Niners will do when it comes to the pass game is there's so much motion, there's shifting, there's formation variation. For people just thinking it'll be Trayvon Diggs versus Deebo Samuel, that'll happen at times, but that's not going to happen all game. The matchup I'm actually most fascinated to see is George Kittle versus Jayron Kearse. Jayron Kearse is the tight end matchup for the Cowboys, and he's a 6'4", 220-pound player. That, to me, is really interesting. The other factor in this game is what the Cowboys do up front. They're very multiple with their front looks. They move people around. Micah Parsons plays a number of different spots. DeMarcus Lawrence will play inside, outside. Same with Gregory. So that, to me, is a fascinating part of this game. Trent Williams will be back this week. So he's been the best left tackle in the game this year. So that side of the ball is really, really interesting. The other side, I think one of the most overlooked things of any playoff team this weekend has been the play of the 49er defensive front. And now with Dre Greenlaw back, they're two linebackers. This is a really good front six. I mean, really good.
Yeah, I mean, the Cowboys O-line still, I mean, how does the Cowboys O-line match up against it?
I don't know. That's a great question. Cowboys have not been able to run the ball with any kind of volume or production basically since about week six. I would not expect them to be able to run it well this week. And then it becomes a passing game of which they can be great. And I know they're the highest scoring team in the league. And I know Dak Prescott's numbers are very good. And I like Dak Prescott based on tape. But I think he's been a little erratic over the last month or so. So I think that's a really intriguing matchup on that side of the ball.
All right, Kansas City, big favorite over Pittsburgh. I've said something's uneven by the Chiefs offense. It's fine, but it doesn't feel like it's, I mean, if 1 through 10, 10 being they're on fire, they feel like a 7 to me. Some days a 6. What's the tape say on Mahomes right now?
Well, that's because it's different. We're used to seeing two things from the Chiefs offense: explosive pass plays at the intermediate and deeper levels, and Mahomes making second reaction movement plays. You're seeing neither. what this offense has morphed into as the season has progressed is Mahomes being an efficient pocket player who gets the ball out of his hands quickly. So you're seeing a lot of 8-yard passes, 9-yard passes, 12-yard passes. We're not used to seeing that with this team.
Yeah.
So it looks different, but they've been very efficient over the last 5-6 weeks.
Yeah. It's kind of a shock Pittsburgh's even here. Credit to Tomlin. All right.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I think the burden's on Pittsburgh's defense because I don't know how Pittsburgh scores 28, 30 points, to be honest with you.
Yeah. Let's go to Arizona at the Rams Monday night. So, listen, Stafford's got a blows through any ceiling. He has fourth quarters and moments. He is spectacular, and the floor can drop pretty quick. What does the Arizona defense on Monday have to do or force Stafford into? What's the tape say?
Well, I think what you'll see, Vance Joseph this year, the DC for the Cards, has played a lot less man coverage than he did a year ago. My guess is because he's not comfortable with his corners. So what they do a lot of, and I think you'll see it in this game, is a lot of disguise and late movement to get to zone coverage concepts. Because one thing about Stafford, and you can argue he throws the ball as well as any quarterback in this league, and he makes big-time throws. But as I'm sure you notice, Colin, every once in a while he gets stuck in the pocket. And he gets sacked or he ends up making kind of an undefined hurried throw. But I think so you need to try to make him do that. As veteran as he is, as smart as he is, as much as he's seen, you've got to try to make him think after the snap of the ball. But they are really good with shot plays. They have really well-designed plays that break down coverage. The last game that he played against Arizona, week 14, was his best game of the season. So that's what he has in his bank against the Cardinals. So this is intriguing.
Yeah, Arizona's always hard to get a read on because so much is accomplished with Kyler Murray's feet. How do the Rams match up with him on tape?
That's a great point. I think you have to be very, very aware of that. I don't think their pass game is consistent in terms of the structure of the pass game, but Kyler Murray can save any given play with his legs.
Yes.
And you have to be aware of that. By the way, they didn't do as much design runs with Kyler Murray this year, probably because of his ankle, but all bets are off now. I would not be surprised to see far more design runs by Kyler Murray in this game.
All right. Now, finally, Buffalo is hosting New England. I think the Bills are the better team, but Belichick and Josh Allen still young. Belichick can make young quarterbacks seduce them into mistakes. And so that's interesting. But is there something about this game that interests you the most?
Yeah, a couple of things. But first, I'll start with New England's O. I think New England will line up with a fullback with 6-0 linemen, and they'll try to make the Bills defend the run by bringing in a third linebacker. No team in this league this year played nickel more snaps than the Bills. In fact, they had many games this year where 100% of their defensive snaps they played with nickel, 5 defensive backs. And I think New England will try to make them step out of their comfort zone. On the other side, boy, I wish I could just get into Bill Belichick's head, but he will do something different than he did in the last game. Look, this is a team that plays a good amount of man. They switched up and played more zone this year over the last 2 months. The last game was obviously won by Buffalo. Allen was phenomenal because he was not sacked, Colin. He did not turn it over, and he was phenomenal on third down, particularly against the Patriots' man coverage. So, again, I wish I could get into Bill Belichick's head and say something really brilliant. I don't know what he'll do differently, but it will not be the same.
Let's go to your big play of the week. It involves Josh Allen.
Yeah, from that Week 16 game, and this was a red zone touchdown, which, by the way, they scored in the red zone, and that's obviously really important when you're playing any team, but certainly the Patriots. So we can run the play. It was a touchdown to Stephon Diggs,
yep.
And it was a third down play, and this was actually a very big play in the game, and this was a rocket throw by Allen. But to break it down, you're going to see Josh Allen in the gun. And what you see here is there's no middle of the field safety, so you know, that's where you're looking. You know that. Josh can see that. And he has the matchup of Stephon Diggs versus J.C. Jackson with Diggs running the seam route. Now, there's only 2 defenders here that can possibly impact this throw, Kyle Van Noy and Devin McCourty. So all he has to do is be aware of those guys as he drops back. and he sees McCourty turn the other way. He sees Van Noy sit low. So now he knows he has Stephon Diggs against J.C. Jackson with outside leverage with a wide open middle of the field, and he puts it right on his hands. So red zone is absolutely critical in this game. That will be a focus for Bill Belichick for sure, because he's always been a believer, as you know, Colin. He's not interested necessarily in yards. He's interested in touchdowns. And score touchdown defense is what Bill Belichick is about, and that was a problem in the Week 16 matchup.
All right, Greg Cosell, 42 years. Great matchups on all this stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Thank you so much, Greg. Appreciate it.
All right, Colin. Talk to you next week.